Well, good morning, everybody. Great to be with you. Bring greetings to all of you on the South Side this morning as well. Any of you who family and friends are still in town from the new year, we welcome you and are honored that you are here. And it's my privilege to be the first one to address you in this new year. If I could just add to the invitation that was already extended to the guys, we only meet in that format three times a year, and we found it to be profitable. The guys have seemed to still have thumbs up on it. So this will be the first of three times that we'll meet. So if your schedule permits, I'd like to personally invite you to come and join us Wednesday night. As I've found there's really something, that's true for the ladies, but there really is something profound when our guys gather together. You get 300, 400, 500 guys, and there's a wonderful thing that God does as he touches us together as men. So come and join us Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Well, as we were singing together, I was just so aware that I begin this new year as a horribly imperfect man. Just terribly imperfect. But I'm also aware, as we sang about the Savior, I'm also really aware that his grace, even as Jacob and the team saying that he will be with me. And his grace, Philippians says that it's the life of God that is always at work perfecting us. Aren't you grateful for that? I'm not there, but I'm telling you, honestly, I'm a different person than when 2016 started. I'm a different man. I'm a better man. I'm a terribly imperfect man, but I'm a better man. And all of that tribute, all of that glory, I know this, I know this, I know me so well. If there is the smell of any kind of goodness that comes out of my life, it is to the credit of the God in whose name we gather, the Savior whose life has been given, and his Spirit who is at work in you. So, friend, you can have hope. As you begin this new year, you can, and you know what? You know what? I've spent a little time with some of you, and you are terribly imperfect too. Let you in on a little secret. So, isn't that great news? It's good news. Well, let's jump in together. Let's just read one verse first. Thank you, Ralph. And this will be the challenge that I want to talk to you about this morning. From Philippians 2, 5 through 8. You must have the same attitude that Jesus Christ had. Now, you got your work cut out for you. That's quite a statement. And I don't think it's made because it's some statement out there that is far beyond us. I think it's made because it's possible. I think with the life of the Spirit in us, it is possible to live this year, to be growing in the same attitude as that of Jesus Christ. And then Paul then begins to define, he gives us a picture of what that attitude looked like. He was God, but he did not think of equality with God. He wasn't clutching. I clutch so much. Instead, he gave up. So I wonder how much yielding, I wonder how much giving you're going to be willing to do this year. He gave up divine privileges, took the humble position of a slave, and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he then humbled himself in obedience. Man, I want to be an obedient man this year. To God, and died a criminal's death on a cross. You must have the same attitude that Jesus Christ had. Mister, my dad would say to me as a young boy, Now, I've been a mister only twice in my life. When I was a young boy, I would be addressed frequently by my father as mister. And then when I got into about high school, from high school until I turned 60, I was never referred to much as a sir or a mister. But when I turned 60, I'm addressed often as sir or mister. So only two seasons in my life. Mister, my dad would say to me, somebody has got an attitude problem. And somebody, this is exactly how the narrative went. And somebody better fix it. Because if somebody doesn't fix it, somebody else is going to help somebody fix it. And you better fix it and fix it now. And it always ended with these words, do you hear me, mister? I always thought there was these mysterious other people in the room, somebody and mister. And now, there was no dialogue in this. My dad never asked me, now, Mark, how are you feeling about these things that I'm talking to you about? There was never any conversation of, this week we'll process it together with our therapist. And I have told you before, that at least when I was a young boy, I wish they would have invented timeouts. We had blackouts, but we didn't have... Timeouts is a relatively new kind of thing. Do you hear me, mister? I learned early, and oh, I'm grateful I learned this. Attitude was a really big deal to my dad. First day of school, I watched all of my friends. Their mom escorted them to school, but not me. It was my dad. My dad took me the first day of school all the way through junior high school, if you can imagine. He would walk in to the teacher. He would go up to whoever it was, and he would say, my name is Don Pickrell, and this is my son, Mark. And we are privileged that he's been chosen to be in your class. We will be praying for you this entire year. And he would conclude, if you have one moment of trouble with his attitude, here is my direct line. You call me, and it will be taken care of. I played all kinds of sports as a kid. I was on teams since I was 5 years of age. And I can remember how coaches would constantly talk to us and write us hard about our attitudes. Life went on. I met and married my wonderful wife, Arlene. And I learned that in marriage, marriages live and die, really, by attitude. And then I got out of college and began to work, and I found that with teams of people, with organizations, it really all boils down to attitude. So I want to ask you, as you come to this new year, how important is your attitude? You know, I find it curious that we refer to one another, we speak about one another with in terms of our attitude. We use various adjectives. Boy, they have a positive, they have a lousy, they have a sour, they have a cocky, they have an entitled, they have a negative, they have a can-do kind of attitude. I wonder if somebody would be really honest with you, what adjectives would be used to describe your attitude as we begin this new year? Well, here's something that is true as we start 2017 together. Even the smallest investment into growing an attitude that is just like that of Jesus Christ, a faith-filled, wholly optimistic, Christ-centered, other-focused attitude will be the biggest payoff you can make in this year. Small Things and Big Difference is the series that we start that will carry us through this month of January. And I want you to know that your attitude will determine what your new year will be like. Question, is it possible for people to change their attitude? And the answer is emphatically, yes, it is. But it comes with a qualifier, because attitudes don't change easily. Attitudes are habit-forming. I've talked with a lot of people who are going to stop some bad habits and try to create some new ones this year. I have a friend who is a smoker, has smoked for a long time, and wants to quit the habit of smoking. And he has got patches from head to toe all over his body, and he has given those of us who know him permission to handcuff him and chain him to poles at times when the urge is just too great. I mean, every one of us knows what it is to try and break a habit, and that is no small deal at all. Well, attitudes become, they become cemented into us, if you please. They become just the way that we are, because it's the way that we have chosen for so long. Life is really about 10% what happens to us and 90% how we react to what happens to each of us. And this year, you and you alone are in charge of your attitude. Now, we have such a glut of information that comes to us, it's hard to remember from one day to the next the stuff that we have heard. But it was over, it might have been 25 years ago, that I was just hungry, learning, trying to figure out what it means to be a leader. And so I went to a conference, and one of the classes that I selected was a class, the presenter entitled it The 360 Degree Leader. And it was so impactful to me that I've carried it all these years. And I want to share just a portion of that with you this morning. So he said, first of all, every person is a leader to some measure, because leadership is really only a matter of influence. And if you have influence over anybody, you are a leader. And he said that leadership, for most of us, when we think of it, we think of leadership that is only top-down. We think of an org chart. We think of somebody who's at the top, and everybody else is at the bottom, and that's the leader. And if you have had the privilege, by the way, to lead anything, you will know that you will spend a lifetime and never learn at all of the skills of what it is to be a great and a maturing leader. But he said that that's not all there is to great leadership. He said maturing leaders also learn to lead up. I'd never heard that before. He said we all have a boss or a board of directors, somebody that we answer to. And you have no authority over those who are over you. And so it takes a whole different kind of skill set. It requires relationship, it requires influence, it requires vision, and it requires persuasion and a whole list of other things. He said, great leaders learn to lead down, and they learn to lead up. And then he said, maturing leaders also learn the skill of leading with colleagues, those who on the org chart stand with you shoulder to shoulder and eyeball to eyeball. Well, you have no authority over them, and so it takes an entirely different skill set to learn to lead laterally. But then he said, the most important challenging, and sophisticated leadership direction is the leadership required with you. And you will be, and he just nailed this point. He said, you will always be inclined to try to lead others before you ever take responsibility for leading yourself. And there's been all kinds of study and research done on why it is that some leaders who have the same educational background, they have the same opportunities, very similar skill sets, some will just blast off. I mean, it's just, they tear it up. And then you have other leaders that only kind of measure so high. And then you have some that just fail miserably given all those same kind of things. And the research comes back again and again to this. It is based on those who will take responsibility for self-leadership. And then he told a story from the Bible. I'd like to read it with you together. If you'd look in your bulletins at 1 Samuel, 3 days later, David and his men arrived home at their town of Ziklag. They found that the Amalekites had made a raid in the Negev, and Ziklag, they had crushed it, burned it to the ground, carried off the women, their wives, their children, and everything else, but without killing anyone. So when David and his men saw the ruins and realized what had happened to their families, they wept. You can only sense the sorrow and the grief that they feel. They wept until they could weep no more. David's two wives, Hur and Hur, the widow of Nabal from Carmel, were among those captured. David was now in great danger because all of his men were very bitter about losing their sons and daughters, and they began to talk of stoning him. But David, here's the line I want you to hear. David found strength in the Lord his God. So David takes his troops into battle against the Amalekites. The Amalekites, the enemy, they come from very strategic, very smart. They come around from the backside and they attack Ziklag. They take every wife, every woman, every child, every possession, and they burn the rest to the ground. When David and his men come, they look at Ziklag. It's just this smoldering city, and they are angry, they are distressed, and they are deeply depressed to such a degree that they're going to turn on David, and there's a plot that breaks out to kill him. By the way, welcome to leadership. Welcome to leadership. So David gets word of what's going on. And look, he doesn't know what to do. He feels every single thing that his men feel. He feels this great sense of loss. But oh, the lonely path of a leader. Because you wear this one hat that nobody else does. And you've got to step to the plate. But David does not know what to do. So David goes off by himself and encourages and strengthens himself in the Lord his God. Now you can only imagine what this was like. In a quiet moment, he reminds himself, you know, who really is in charge? Who? Let me ask you, in 2017, who do you think is really in charge of this year? Who is it? Who is it that knows every detail of everything that you feel and you will face? Who is it? It is God alone. And David will get his heart centered, his eyes focused on God, and then he will go back to his troops and fire them up, and with united, God-centered attitudes, they will rescue their family and experience this great victory over the Amalekites. All of this, that came down to one person who was willing to take control over their attitude. The hardest person you will ever lead is you. The most difficult attitude you will ever change is your own. Who is it this year that will keep ego out of your life? Who is it that's going to keep fear at bay and courage inside you? That is my job. That is your job. Self-leadership is your responsibility. So whose job is it to change a negative, sour, lousy, pouty, rotten, entitled attitude into a positive, hope-filled, God-focused one? That's your biggest job as you begin this new year. Now, I'll bet there's somebody who's biting your lip and you'd love to throw something at me right now. Because you are convinced that your attitude is the responsibility of somebody else. It's their fault. And how do we know that? Because when we talk to you, all you ever talk about is parents, spouses, current, former, boyfriend, girlfriend, bosses. Even pastors get thrown into that. We want the responsibility of our attitude to be the job of anybody but me. Only you. You're the only one who can do this work this year. Only you can take on the assignment of having an attitude that is just like that of Jesus Christ. I got up one morning recently, and I don't know why. You know how you're not even aware of things that are going on? I didn't sleep well. You begin the day tired. And I had a very full calendar in front of me that day. And I typically, it's not my nature to get mean. I don't get mean. But my kind of MO is I'll retreat or withdraw, which is just as deadly, by the way. And so what was happening was I had a dangerous attitude that was brewing. And guess, when you have a dangerous attitude brewing, guess who's the only one that doesn't know you have a dangerous attitude brewing? It's you. Everybody else is aware. And I think I maybe tried to pray some pathetic prayer that didn't help at all. So I got in my car and heading down to the office, and I'm just feeling anxious. I felt fearful. Just all kinds of stuff. I felt small. That's really the word. I felt really small that day. And so I got in the car, and there was just this inner voice, Mister. Aren't you grateful for the work of God's Spirit that is ever, ever at work in your life? And I had the best church service of the year that took place in 15 minutes from my drive in my truck. Mark, somebody's got an attitude problem. And everything you touch this day will be damaged. Is this the kind of man that you want to be? And I mean, of course not. But I was so grateful to the work of God's Spirit. Lord, fill us, fill me. Pray that prayer daily this year. Lord, fill me with your Spirit. I had forgotten all kinds of things, and I realized that dangerous attitude was my job to change. And I said, I'll pay whatever price to fix it. How do you take a runaway attitude and get it back on track? Well, I asked some people who I think have terrific attitudes. They're consistently joy-filled. They have a holy optimism about them. they're God-focused and they're other-centered. I asked them two questions that I want to share with you, and this is how we'll finish our morning. The first question was this: if you got a bad attitude brewing, who do you hold responsible for making the necessary adjustments? I didn't even get to the end of the sentence, and every person I interviewed said, "That's my bad. That's my deal alone." And with a sense of emphasis, I will not tolerate a negative, self-centered attitude to dominate my life. And here's what I learned. Every person you know who consistently lives with a Christ-focused attitude, with a great attitude, they have gone to war for it. They have fought for it. And conversely, every person you know who consistently lives with a bad attitude has thrown up the flag of surrender, and they live blaming their lousy attitude on somebody else. No one gets a great attitude by accident this year. Only by choice. Only by commitment. The second question that I asked was this: what practical things do you do to own your attitude? And I want to share just a few of those things that I learned from those individuals that I interviewed. First, all of them said and understood clearly that their attitude sets the temperature for everything else in their life. Nothing, they told me, is more important to the success of name any aspect of my life, name any part of my life. Nothing is more important than to fight for a great Christ-centered kind of attitude. They said, when mine is heading in a southbound direction, when a bad one is brewing, I've learned, they told me, to stop. This was so helpful, and to just call a timeout. And I asked them, no, why is that necessary? And they said to me, because I can't do attitude adjustments on the run. I thought that was really insightful, profoundly insightful. And look, we know that. We run, we live our lives running. The pace of our lives is so insane. Maybe that's why the Bible says things like, look, still yourself before God. Still yourself before Him. Because it's in the quiet place that God gets a hold of you and has a chance to say, Mister, or in the case of some of you, Missy, be still and know that I am God. And I have found that to be true, that stillness helps me get God in my attitude. Isaiah 30 says, in quietness and trust you will find your strength. So I would encourage you to consider several times this year to just remember to take a time out for a moment and adjust your attitude. The second thing I learned from them was that there was an inseparable link between keeping their attitude on track and just devotions. You've heard it. We almost become numb to it. And they said, it is vital to me that I have the scripture somewhere in my life, that I pray and I call out and pour out my heart to God. They said, this centers my soul. Here's where I get and keep things straight. In fact, we've got, if you don't have a reading plan, we've got a brand new one that we're launching for the church. You can get it out, I think, as you leave this morning or online. So if that would help you, join us in a church-wide reading plan as we begin the new year. And here's what one guy, I love this. He said, Mark, he said, there's one verse that I pray every Monday morning. This is the verse I pray. Don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything, and he actually went through it and prayed it. Lord, let everything that I say be good and helpful, so that all of my words will be an encouragement to those who listen to them. And he said this, he said, my bad attitude always shows up first in my mouth. He said, it shows up in short, abrasive, sarcastic, damaging, and below-the-belt words. So he said, I make that a weekly part of how I pray. So prayer and the scriptures. Third, they told me, I thought this was interesting, soul-lifting music. Remember King Saul, first king of Israel? Remember, he was a guy, he had an attitude problem frequently. Remember that? Just constant mood swings. And he would hire musicians to come in, and it helped him keep his attitude adjusted. Well, it's a powerful thing to sometimes just turn off the news and just put in soul-lifting music. I've watched when we come in, as we gather each week to worship, it's amazing how you can just sense an adjustment begin to happen as we just sing and we worship together. The fourth thing I learned from my interview was they said physical exercise. In 2 weeks, we're going to take a weekend and talk about that. But physical exercise, and they said sometimes it just helps me sweat my nasty self out of me. Isn't it true? You just get out and run 10 miles and you'll be different when you get back, I guarantee you. So, the fifth thing I learned was friendship. They said nothing. Now, these are not acquaintances. These are not the people who kiss your backside, tell you everything you want to hear. These are the people who will look you in the eye and say, you make me sick. Those are the people who are the greatest gift, who will just say, Mister, somebody needs an attitude adjustment. What a gift friendship is. And sixth and finally, they said that there are certain activities that just breathe positive life into them. And I asked them. Some of them said, listen, if I can just get out on my bike, if I can paint, somebody told me. If there's a creative outlet, it's amazing what that does to adjust my attitude. For me, if I can get on the beach, for some of you can get in the mountains, whatever that is, but be aware of those activities. Several of them said to me, it's just the rhythm, the activity of gathering every weekend as we come together. They said that was such a balancing act when it comes to their attitude. Jacob, would you come? And Alex, if you'll get ready on the other side. Last and finally, your mind is the trigger for your attitude. Your mind. What you think is what you're going to feel, how you'll act, and what you're going to say. And so as I talked with them, I understood, as Philippians 4 says, and now I want you to fix your thoughts, set your thoughts. So this year is going to be filled with all kinds of stuff that's coming at you, and you will choose at what you will stare at. Now there's a lot of things that you'll have to glance at that you won't want to see, but you don't have to stare at those. If you'll set your stare in the right direction, it's amazing what that will do for your attitude. In fact, I thought this was funny, but I went to the car wash just Friday, and I had just gotten home from Oregon, made that long drive, and my truck was just a mess from the roads. So I took it in, and my truck's about 10, 11 years old, and I'm needing to think about replacing it. So I've been looking. I really like trucks. I think I want to get another one. And so I've been looking at the Ford F-150, and oh, man, those things are so doggone expensive, I'm telling you. So there was a guy there, and I noticed he had a beautiful F-150 crew cab. It's the platinum model. I know this thing was at least 65 grand, at least 65 grand. So I was waiting for my 2006 Tundra, and he's waiting for his 2015 Ford. We just start talking for a moment. I said, man, that's a beautiful truck. And I said, I'm looking, I'm going to have to replace mine at some point. And the whole time I'm thinking, man, I'd love his truck. I want his truck. Give me your truck, is what I want. And so here's what I'm thinking. So he says to me, well, have you seen the new 2017s? And it was like, it caught me in such a moment. It's like he has this beautiful truck that I'd give my right arm to have, but he's already done with it. He wants the new 2017 model. Listen, I can tell you, I think you're like me. I can live this year so wishing that I was somebody other than who I am, that I have something other than what I have. Lord, help us to set our stare. So let gratitude be just the regular rhythm of your life. Lord, thank you. Thank you for my precious wife of now 42 years together. Thank you for my kids, even the one that's still giving me heartache. Thank you for my grandkids. And CA, thank you for you. My gratitude, I can't express to you how grateful I am for you. Thanks for being the kind of church that you are. You want to set your stare and fix your thoughts? We're going to need each other, but we can do that together. You can have the same attitude as that of Jesus Christ. Let's sing together, Jacob.